macroeconomics haven't changed. Depending on who you listen to, there's 3 to 8 million unit shortage, and a lot of those are in the Sun Belt. And builders, developers have stopped developing because of the interest rate rises. So they say, you know, late in 25, early 26 are going to be banner years for rent growth because population continues to migrate to the South. There's prices have to go up, and that sooner or later, that's going to lead to asset prices as well. So there's reason to be bullish if you're a patient investor.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
Today's show, I have the pleasure of speaking with Randy Langendorfer. Now, Randy is the president of InvestArc Properties, focusing on creating investor value and passive income returns for busy professionals. He has been in multifamily since 2014 and has both been a general partner and a passive investor in over 4,000 doors. Now, he is all focused about busy professionals who want to include multifamily in their portfolio, and InvestArc helps provide an opportunity to partner with experts who are aligned with their investment goals. Now, I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible insight and knowledge, but enough of me, let's get him out here. G'day, Randy. Welcome to the show.
Reid, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be on your show. It's a pleasure. A fan from afar for a long time, and just great to finally catch up.
Yeah, it is. It is. We were talking in the green room a little bit about old partnerships and stuff like that, and rehashing where you're come from. And we have met before, but the semi-old friends on the show and chatting here and looking at where they've come from over the last 10 years. Because we were both just discussing that you've been in the business for about, you know, since about the same time I got started, around 2014 is when RSN was founded. So it's we've probably got a lot of good stories to tell. But with that being said, I do want to rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid.
Mowing lawns. You know, that was back in the day when we mowed our own lawns, and my father had a lawnmower, and I was a greedy little kid. And so, started mowing neighbors' lawns, and then my mom started getting me jobs from her friends, et cetera, and mowing lawns.
Walk us through the background and the corporate world of Randy, because obviously you are at a space now where, you know, you're in 4,000 doors, you've got a business, you've been doing this for 10 years. But what's the story behind why you wanted to get into this space? And I do know personally that you've been able to achieve some pretty awesome milestones along the way.
Yeah, mine was a very conscious effort. And I woke up in about the year, 2010, 2011, and I had a brother-in-law that wanted me to start flipping houses with him. And so I first became a hard money lender. And we did that successfully. I did about, 10, 15 houses, flipping houses, a hard money lender. Where we'd lend them the money and they would make all the improvements and sell it, and we'd get a percentage gain. Moved to Houston, Texas for business because at the time I went to work for I was working for a private equity company, a spinoff of Goodyear Tire and Rubber, a Carlisle-based company for those who are in the line of private equity. And it was really an aha moment for me, Reid, when I woke up in about 2011 or so and realized that I was potentially going to get laid off. And as an executive making a really good job, the aha moment was you need to find another source of income for yourself. And I wasn't going to get laid off because of anything I did or didn't do. It's just because of the corporate economics at the time. And so I really had a conscious effort at that time of finding something different. Looked at small businesses, franchises, a lot of different opportunities. Fell into real estate, as I said, with my brother-in-law because I could do it part-time. I moved to Houston, Texas I was in Ohio at the time, in the Cleveland, Ohio market. And I moved to Houston, Texas because I needed to find another W-2 job. Came here and did a couple fix and flips or hard money lends, I should say, hard money lends in Houston, but found at that time multifamily through one of the large educational groups here in Houston called Lifestyles Unlimited. Got involved and heard another guy at one of their annual expos. Another guy by the name of Brad Sumrock, you probably have heard of, out of Dallas, another educational group. And I just ended up spending 3 or 4 years at the Sumrock group, and great group. I really learned the business, fell in love with it. And the other aha moment with me is the first find another income. First, the second one is when I was could realize I could buy a multi-million dollar asset with a non-recourse loan. And so I had been in the corporate world, not rich, but I had accumulated a few assets and I really didn't want to jeopardize those in terms of signing a personal note to buy a business or something like that. And so fell in love with multifamily and have never really turned back. Did my first LP investment in 14, as I said, and did my first GP as in 18. Fast forward today, I'm on, like I said, about 1,500 doors as a GP and about, 3,000 as an LP. Still invest in other people's deals as well. So I'm all in on this asset class. Let's put it that way.
That's awesome. It's a great story there. Interesting you mentioned small businesses and stuff like that. I think what I heard from you is that you just didn't want to do non-recourse. You didn't want to do recourse on loans to go and create the wealth. Is that kind of why you end up with the multi?
That was a big, big obstacle for me to get over because, again, I just didn't want to sign all of my net worth away if it failed. And not that I was going to let it fail, whatever I did. I've never really failed in anything in my life, but I wasn't going to let it fail. But that was a real obstacle and just kind of a personal commitment for me is never signed personally on a loan. Not regrettably, but I have done it since then. So on a multifamily loan. But that was the main driver at the time and finding something that otherwise I couldn't do part-time to grow into. And I would have to quit that corporate job, step away from a healthy income and go down to, $100,000 a year. Whatever it was, which as a father of three and a stay-at-home wife, wasn't very rational thinking for that major change that in my season of life.
Yeah, no, it's a big step for a lot of people, but you have actually made the corporate switch, right? Just recently.
I did just about a year ago, actually, end of April, 1st of May of 23. I finally cut that corporate string and walked away from the corporate world to do this full time. And so I'm loving life and having a lot of fun, working a lot, but that's okay when you enjoy what you're doing. It's not really work.
We are in some distressed times right now. And you mentioned a gentleman who has not been away from the headlines recently. How have you seen it change over the years? I've got an opinion on it. I think we've seen the best bull run in multifamily. We won't see another 10 years like this. But what's your take on it?
My take. I think you're absolutely right. Probably hit it right at the beginning of it, maybe a little bit into it, 14, 13, up through 22, 20, 21, 22, 23 were the years when it really started to change. And I think, as we all know, there's just been a lot of operators and I've gotten in a couple of them, variable rate debts. If you bought in 21, 22 or 20, 21 or 22, you bought with variable rate debt. And the best of minds, no one predicted a 500 basis point run by the Fed in less than 18 months. So it is extremely challenging. It's not as bad as office space, but moral story, somebody's already got it worse.
It is, you're right, but it's also like we've all been in a tide coming in type of environment. Now the tide has gone out. It's been a real reality check for a lot of us in the syndication space. And a lot of us, I include myself in that, who've come through the gurus of the world and self-educated. So there has been there's a bit of a dirty word, the old syndication now, right? So how are your investors taking to that and understand that there's ebbs and flows in a real estate market?
Yeah, every individual is different, obviously, at least in mine. And I think that I've done a deal. I only did one deal in 23 and one in 24 so far. I would label them as skittish, understandably so, especially seasoned executives that have been around and seen some of the world and seen, the 08 and 09 recession and don't have PTSD because of that. But I think you're right. The world has changed. I'm still optimistic and bullish on the asset class in the long run. I believe in it. I still have majority of my net worth in it. But I think it's going to, as you, in your illustration, low tide shows a lot of people who are swimming naked. So
yeah,
as the old saying goes, and there's a lot of them.
Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below.
Telling your investors right now to be optimistic about what are you trying to point to as the data, you know, and say, look, this is still good in a sort of tide is going out type of environment.
I really try to find a deal that's different. You know, there, I'm sure you get hundreds of offerings every month, year. So the deal I took to my investors in 23 was here in Texas. You know that taxes is a huge issue, so it was a large deal and was tax abated. And so that is just, it was a large deal. It was 600 doors. And we saved $2 million day one out of the expenses by being tax abated. We didn't have to pay any real estate tax. Yeah, there's a portion of that's affordability, but it didn't even come into play. So intellectually, if you can take $2 million out of the expenses day one, you're really, it's a different kind of deal and has a lot more probability of success and had fixed rate debt, et cetera, et cetera. But I still, when I'm talking to my investors, and I do routinely, you know, I think it's a matter of what do you want to do? I'm still investing. I'm still doing deals. I've had troubled asset, but I'm still in the deal and I'm still in the hunt. Investors have lost money in the stock market, but I don't see them stop putting money in their 401ks. So it's a matter of having a long-term horizon for me and realizing that everything goes in waves. And yes, it's not a good time now, but I don't know that we ever get back to 2014-15 in the foreseeable future, but I think the asset class is still going to perform very well over the long haul.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we do biannual market state of the market addresses to our investors, and we try and pull on a lot of data. And you know, we are not the experts, but we look at other people who are, and you know, regurgitate that. And I believe, and what we've been doing internally at RSN is, you know, we've been tracking deals, and we've seen a cap rate expansion happen in lockstep across a lot of the smile states, in conjunction with the Fed increasing interest rates, but also couple on top of that a lot of supply, right? And that's sort of really been the perfect storm. So it's really caused deterioration in value as interest rates go up, asset prices go down. So, and then you look at the big boys and girls, the KKRs of the world and the BlackRocks, Blackstones, they're putting billions of dollars into multifamily right now.
They're doubling down.
They're extremely bullish, and you know, we follow the smart money as well. And yes, the Sun Belt has been the golden children for the last 10 years, but you're seeing it slow down a little bit, right? I remember when I first got started investing in San Antonio, the average two bedroom was $850 or $1,000. Today, that's probably two bedrooms $1,400 or $1,500. You know, so for you know a Class C plus B minus working class asset. So I think overall, to the point I'm trying to make is that we have seen some instability, but I think we are at or near the bottom. And I think today is a great time to be buying. We bought three assets last year. We're buying another one right now and buying a third, a fifth, I should say, all with fixed rate debt. You know, I think that was the biggest lesson. You get positive leverage day one, which we can get with distress from distressed sellers. I think this will be a generational buying opportunity as we speak right now. And this won't go live right this second, but if you're listening, you know, understand the opportunity is today. Like, Get out there, start underwriting deals. Do not put your pencils down and keep going. You know, Randy, I rambled on there for a little bit, but do you agree with the sentiment? Oh,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you touched on it briefly, but I'd expand. I mean, the macroeconomics haven't changed. Depending on who you listen to, there's 3 to 8 million unit shortage across the U.S., and a lot of those are in the Sun Belt. And builders, developers have stopped developing because of the interest rate rises. So they say, you know, late in 25, early 26 are going to be banner years for rent growth because population continues to migrate to the South. There's going to be fewer supply. Prices have to go up. And that sooner or later, that's going to lead to asset prices as well. So there's reason to be bullish, as you said, if you're a patient investor. Now, if you're wanting something quick return, I think the time of a 5-year double your money in type of investments are probably a thing of the past, but you can still do very well with the depreciation and the tax loss. And, you know, we still look at high returns, high IRRs and equity multipliers. But, you know, I tell my investors, so if I only return to you 1.7, 1.6, are you going to stop investing with me for 5 years?
It's also the time average value of investing. If you're putting dollars on the street every year and making the decisions in the right, with the right information at the right time, you may get some win. You're going to get a lot more wins, but you may get some bruises. And, you know, I think in 2022, 2021, people were making decisions of floating rate debt. And, you know, we can't throw stones at glass houses. We've all got at least one of them, right? There's not one person out there. If you haven't been active, wouldn't. But also the big boys have got the same problems, right? Like this has been an industry-wide problem, but you've got to keep going. And I think your point of treating large commercial multifamily as fix and flip is dangerous. And we, you know, I'll put my hand up and say we have doubled people's money in 3 years. We've done bloody well because of that rising tide. But you were going back to more of the fundamentals. And I come from a country in Australia where if you double your money in 10 years, you're doing just fine. You know what I mean? Like it's a slow and steady wins the race. We have treated the asset class a little bit too fix and flippy like you've done in your early days. And that's where people are now, investors are expecting it. And they say, well, you're not going to double my money in 3 years? Well, this must be a bad deal. It's like, no, it's a risk-adjusted deal. You got to understand what that means and the returns that are associated with it.
And I've seen several deals here in Houston that have come out with the big boys. I can't remember if it's KKR or Blackstone, but a couple of the, like you said, you know, they're getting rid of deals too for reasons because they've had a lot of cash calls that they got to get back to their investors too. So your point is it's not just the small and the mid-size entrepreneurs in this space. It's the big boys as well. It's asset-wise. But the other side of that, Reed, is, you know, we talk about all those macro sides, but I'm also very conscious that whenever I talk to one of my investors, I don't give a rat's tail about all those excuses. The fact is, where is it compared to pro forma? And for that, it's true. The macro and all those things we just talked about are true. But the reality is we as operators really have to get heads down and like you said, make sure they cash flow day one. It's about cash flow. It's not about anything else right now and just making sure the assets are producing day one and they stay that way.
Right. And then an asset that you bought at the wrong time, it just, you either hang on and you do a capital call and you keep going or, you know, you take your loss.
God forbid something worse happens. But I mean, and I'm sure you can name, hopefully you haven't any, but I can think of some people that I would consider very good operators that have had big problems recently.
Oh, some of them. Yeah. I can name a lot of them, but I don't want to. But you know, I think that's the point we're trying to make is that from the small guys to the big guys, there have been widespread problems, all related to the type of financing that we all gouged on. You know, everything from the new developer to, you know, the starting out hungry syndicator at a conference, all the way through to the really big boys and girls. It's been a function of financing, and I think that has been, you know, you probably know this, Randy, like how frothy it was bidding on deals back in 21, 22. It was just insane.
Yes, that's an understatement. Frothy is a good word, though. But like you said, and like, how can you know, you just sit there and I still ask myself, how can they do that? Are they 1031 money from California or something? But how can they make it work for that price? I don't know. But they bought it and so they're living with it.
I think the big thing that we also have to understand here that we have tracked very closely internally across the five different MSAs we're invested in is, and I will look back and probably do a podcast and write books about it, but the perfect storm, I mentioned before, we had higher interest rates, right? We had we had higher interest rates, we had a COVID pandemic. But what we also saw on the rental side, which is what is you mentioned before about what you can control as an operator today, but you also can't, is rents, right? It's revenue. We're all about trying to manipulate revenue on a multifamily asset.
Yeah.
We have seen, and I would love your opinion on this and what you've seen in Texas, that with the stimulus money, a lot of people had cash in their pockets to pay more, coupled with the fact that maybe the pandemic forced people, hey, I don't want to live with that roommate, or I don't want to live with my mum and dad. I'm going to go out and get my own spot. And I've got a bit of dollars in my pocket. Well, I'm going to pay a little bit more. And all of a sudden, these pro formas are coming out saying, well, yeah, you can get $1,600, $1,700 on Class C plus, lipstick, types of renos. And all of a sudden now, those same rents, I'm across five MSAs right now, I can wholeheartedly say that a two-bedroom Class C plus B minus renovated product will not get you any more than $1,400. That's, you're down somewhere in the 20% range.
Yeah.
From those peaks, but it's also a combination of what the money was pumped into the economy. And we have done a lot of analysis in the certain literally sub-markets when that dollars shut off and when we started to see rents drop. And it was literally within 2 months. And it's happened across the Sun Belt. And I don't know if you've gone to that level.
I think it's across the U.S.
It's
magnified in the Sun Belt where you and I are because we're operating there, but it's across the whole U.S. And yeah, we flooded the economy with cash and now, right, the risk in front of us, if you fast forward all that today, the risk in front of us is there a recession and our rents going to be, are we going to have a challenge in finding competent tenants, which I guess is the headwinds I think we're facing. It's just a matter of, the Fed always works retroactively and retroactive data. And so they've held too high too long. And if they don't let it down the rates fast enough, I think we're in for potential recession that is, if we're not already in one. Many people would argue we are in one already.
We all invest in red states for eviction reasons, but it's had the opposite effect now in some of the markets we're in that's been created because we can evict so quickly. You create a cesspool of everyone's evicting bad tenants because they can't afford these higher rents that we were elevated in 21, 22. And now you've got dings against your name. So as they come through the door, you're like, no, get out. We can't have you because you've been evicted from three or four other places. I know, Phoenix is a classic market where that's happening right now. We are seeing a flaw, at least, and I'd love to hear if you're seeing a flaw occur in your markets. I'm not in Houston, but I think we've hit the floor in terms of rents. And now we're actually starting to see some positive growth here in 2024. But 2023 was brutal. I'll tell you what, it was a brutal year.
I hope we're in that trough in the bottom, that we've hit that bottom. I think we would say ours in Houston and Houston, Dallas. I also have an asset in Tucson where the Dallas and Houston ones have certainly appeared to have bottomed out or stabilized anyhow. And I'm hoping that we start reaching back up again on $25 renewals and stuff like that that have some relief in sight. But yeah. Consistent. It's tough out there, and I sympathize with young operators that are getting started in this market at this time. You and I started in a bull market, and the rising tides covered a lot of our mistakes, put it that way.
They did. And I think, as I said, mentioned earlier, like looking back when government stimulus occurs, it's great for rents until it stops. And not understanding that impact on our rents and on valuations probably has been my biggest lesson, coupled with lower interest rates and getting the worst debt, you know, getting bad debt on it and all that stuff, there's more nuance to it and really paying more attention to stimulus dollars at coming out of a pandemic. And right or wrong, you know, I'm not going to get political here, but it's been a pretty rough couple of, you know, call it 4 years since the pandemic. And, yeah. And we no one's pro forma would they have ever underwritten any of this to happen.
So if you are, you were a genius and you're out in the talk circuit making millions of dollars now, but
right.
Nobody did. And you're absolutely right. And nobody expected the rates to be as high and as long as they have been. Echo all the things you just said. If nobody's underwriting came close to it, you know, everybody went out and bought, myself, and I'm sure you did too, and you've bought rate caps.
Yep.
And thought we were mitigating risk for investors and ourselves then. But now those things are coming up for renewal if they haven't already, and it's brutal.
Yep. So I remember having a conversation with an investor on one of the deals, the only deal that we have a bit of distress on is at the time. And I remember talking to her and she was like, oh, bloody rate caps are highway robbery. And I was like, I agree. But I've got to be seen to be doing something, right? To mitigate it, right? Because you can't just say, well, we're not going to get one. And I've heard of operators who didn't get one. But, you know, at the time, you're looking back, you're like, oh, I probably should have got that 4-year rate cap instead of the 3-year rate cap, because the cost today is, you know, it's insane. And again, I don't know anyone personally who's doing floating rate debt on a bridge product today, unless it's, you know, 20% occupied and just, you know, getting cents on the dollar. But there are product there. Well, I'm seeing a lot of deals out there, as I mentioned earlier, per what we're saying earlier in the show. It's a great time to be buying right now if you can find the right deal. So keep turning over the stones.
The find the right deal. And also I would say for the passive investor listening, it's finding the right sponsor that you're comfortable with, right? Making sure that you're comfortable with their business thesis on this particular asset and where it is. I had an investor I was talking to one day, and he goes, I was really looking at kind of buying into some kind of fund versus a single asset. You can go ahead, but this probably isn't for you, but a lot of advantages to a single asset. There's disadvantages too, but, finding that sweet spot for the investor and the investor knowing the sponsor is still the same. That was the same when you and I got started. Know the sponsor, know, like, and trust. Investor knows you, know, like, and trust. And it's the same today, and it's probably magnified or tripled to know it today.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Randy, at the end of the show, you know, I'd love to just what are your plans for 2024 and beyond? Now that we've sort of talked about the reset and the headwinds we've had, what are you doing differently today that and what's your outlook for the remaining 6 months of 2024?
Still looking at deals. Still looking at deals. So I have developed partnerships that I find successful. I will say honed my definition of what I want in a partner. Our partners are looking for something that fits the same mindset I did. I've also branched out and started a coaching business in the last 6 months, small coaching business. And another partner and I have developed a development business. We're going to be trying to develop, getting started in the small and the development world using our own money. To build some duplexes and a couple single family homes just to get that underneath our belt and build a resume. So full agenda for the rest of the year, but haven't given up on real estate and hope I never do.
So I think we will look back and in 10 years time when we chat again, you know, get back here on the show that, you know, we'll look back at this and just, you know, you've got to write it out. There's going to be ups and downs and you can't just always have ups. And you know, we'll learn our stripes for it. And I do think personally, we are going to start seeing rates come down very quickly in a short period of time. I personally, if we talk at Christmas time, I think we will see at least one or two cuts, and that will take the volatility out of the market, which will help rate cap pricing, and it will help, you know, a lot of relief in terms of, you know, optimism, and I think that will help sort of stimulate more. You're stimulating more confidence in the general economy.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. If we just see one rate cut, it's going to take some volatility off the plate for the investor. And I've never returned the way it was, but that's going to take a lot of volatility out of the market from both the rate cap underwriters and buyers and investors. So Let's hope it comes down as fast as it went up.
Well,
that may be a pressure.
If history is an indication of anything, it should. But you know, we've been at this high for longer for longer than I think you made a comment earlier that we've probably been up here for higher than what we thought we would be here for. So, but Randy, at the end of every show, we like to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Uh-oh, here we go. Let's do it.
Question number one is, what's a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
I consider myself a very well-organized person. If I have got a superpower, one of them would be is I'm very organized. And so I very methodically organize my day at the beginning of each day with a to-do list. I got a weekly to-do list and a daily to-do list. So I try to conquer those out. And so starting the morning and trying to get very organized before I power up the machine and start at it. And I think it's done me well over the years in the corporate world and in this.
Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Can't name just one. There's been a lot of different mentors that I have that have built into me and different aspects from underwriting to capital raising to asset identification. I would say I'd give credit, though I'm not part of his group, as I like Brad Sumrock did a lot for me in terms of teaching. I'm in Rod Khalif's group today. Rod's a great motivator, has built a lot into me, and I'm appreciative of both of those guys as well as many others that are too numerous to count or not. I don't want to leave anybody else out, put it that way.
Awesome stuff. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? Meaning it could be a physical tool like your phone or an iPad, or it could be a piece of software you just can't run the business without.
You know, I, having been in the business 10 years, I'm sure you can appreciate, man, the number of tools in the business today is astonishing compared to what it was. And I'm sure that 5 years from now will be equally as amazed, but from CRMs to investor portals, all this, I'm going to say the single most important tool is my laptop because it connects me to everything. That's oversimplified, but I don't know that there's any one tool because you need a portal, you need a CRM, email, Slack, WhatsApp. I think if there's a frustration in today's world, it's that everybody has a different favorite communication tool. And I'm a little old school. I still like email. I have multiple email accounts versus spend time in Slack, spend time in WhatsApp, school, and all these different platforms that different people use, and they become a little overbearing at times to keep them track of all of them. But
yeah,
no, it's like millennium.
You're completely correct. I remember back in 2014, 2015, like if you got people, investors to sign on DocuSign, it was like, yippee. And now everyone's got a portal and we're kind of oversassed right now. So
DocuSign was probably the most advanced we used 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Question number four is, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
You know, I choose not to look at them as a failure. So I'm going to try to turn the negative into a positive, which is, I won't say failure, but regret. Biggest regret is getting involved in variable rate debt when my instincts as a finance CPA, MBA guy said, don't do it. But I was hungry and greedy. But that has made me, turning that to a positive, that has made me a much better operator, syndicator, risk manager. And I'm going to use that for the foreseeable future going forward to make sure that I go back to my fundamentals of making sure. That's what I did in the corporate world for a lot of years. I was in the corporate risk areas. And so I said, you know, mitigating risk. And we all got a little greedy in 21, 22.
Question number five is, where can people reach you to continue the conversation? That will be in your sphere. Where do they go?
Reed, I'm on all of the social medias. I mean, I'm in LinkedIn, Facebook. Feel free to get me there. I have two really portals. If you're interested in any mentoring, education, both passive and syndication-wise, it's Multifamily Maestros, all one word, multifamilymaestros.com. And my syndication business is invest-ark.com. All of them have contact pages on there. Love to chat with your audience about anything.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. I want to just reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think what you mentioned there before about the you had an instinct about floating rate debt and the risk mitigation. And I think all of us have had, looking back, you know, hindsight 2020, you maybe have had those feelings at the time, oh, is this the right, is this fundamentally the right thing we should be doing? You know, like, well, you got to stretch that little bit to get that deal done. You know, I think that has all come to roost now across the industry. And major lessons that we're gonna take out of that and be better operators moving forward. I think that's the key to this. And having the right, I think when you're talking earlier about the attitude towards talking with investors about their expectations of returns, we've got to go back to the fundamentals. And I think you are at the forefront of trying to keep your investors educated about what's happening and what it really means and resetting their mindset of having a medium to long-term investment in real estate and treating it as such, you know? So, yeah. Did I leave anything out?
Very well, sir. I really, really appreciate the time. It's great to connect with you again. And I look forward to chatting with your audience.
Awesome. Right. Well, look, again, thank you so much for taking some time out of the day. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with incredible advice from Randy. Remember, if you want to check out anything he does, go over to Multifamily Maestros or invest-arc.com, I believe. Is that right? Correct, Randy? To check out anything that he is doing. He's across all the different social media platforms. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to listen to this show. The easiest way to give back is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes or share it with a friend. You can also find me at my website at rsnpropertygroup.com. I'm also across all the socials, Reed Goossens, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. Hit me up and we're going to do it all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, go give life a crack.